Hello and welcome to The Soprano Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
And today we will be discussing Season 4, Episode 3 of The Sopranos, titled Christopher. This episode aired September 29th, 2002. The teleplay was by Michael Imperioli. The story was by Michael Imperioli and Maria Lorino, and it was directed by Tim Van Patten. Here's the HBO synopsis for this episode. Silvio and Ralph must take care of a planned protest of a Columbus Day parade by a Native American group. At an Italian Pride ladies' lunch, Carmela is embarrassed by anti-mafia remarks. Meanwhile, Ralph deals with new relationship troubles, and Bobby receives some tough news. Well, we have arrived here at Christopher.
The anti-Pine Barrens.
Anti-Pine Barrens.
Christopher stands out as perhaps the most loathed episode of the series within the Sopranos fan community.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are shining moments, I would say,
yes,
in this episode.
I laughed out loud, actually, a couple times, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's another Michael Imperioli episode. Tim Van Patten directing. Now, Tim Van Patten did come up with the idea for Pine Barrens. Is
right.
there any similar? Is there any similar story here with Christopher? Or we
I
just,
don't, you know, I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, and you know, perhaps we should look this up. But I believe it's like a similar thing where someone just pitched an episode out of the blue, maybe based upon a dream or some sort of like outside thing that wasn't the traditional way that an episode would be pitched.
Mm-hmm.
And David Chase, as the showrunner, was like, all right, yeah, that sounds fun. Let's do an episode. It worked for Pine Barrens, which came from a dream that Tim Van Patten had. But
right.
here it works less well for reasons that we will get into.
Yeah. The other story creator, this Maria Lorino, this is her only credit
right.
for anything.
I had never seen her name before.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea who she was, and I'm still curious to know who she is and what her connection was to this show.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Created a story. Well, the scene, the first scene opening outside the pork store. This
mm-hmm.
is actually a very, I like this shot
sure.
of all the guys collected out front of the pork store. It's a nice shot, and you're just thinking, okay, they're hanging out of nowhere. Patsy calls out a license plate.
Right.
Apparently they're just playing this license plate game.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I mean, right off the bat, that kind of tells you the level we're going to be operating at throughout this episode.
It's a hint.
Yeah.
That it leads into Bobby reading a news article about the disruption of this Columbus Day parade that's coming up, and it's going to be disrupted by a group of Native Americans.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Who are offended by the history that Columbus represents and what he did to their people, and they are unhappy with this Columbus Day parade. And, you know, right off the bat here, we discover, now I remember this was a big issue for me when I first saw this episode,
oh.
and I wonder if other people feel the same. When I saw that the episode was called Christopher and that the teleplay was done by Michael Imperioli,
mm.
I got my hopes up for some kind of like heavy, deep exploration of the character of Christopher Moltisanti.
Right.
Turns out Christopher refers to Christopher Columbus. I feel
yeah.
like this was all intentional and that the Sopranos writers did this to troll us.
Well, the trolling is pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they really push this Christopher Columbus storyline.
Right.
Hard.
Yes. To the annoyance of pretty much everybody.
Down our throats.
Yeah. yeah.
So these guys are debating, discussing Christopher Columbus, and there's just a lot of Italian-American pride amongst these men, especially from Sill, who ends the scene by saying he's going to look into this. This is going to become priority number one for him. I like the detail, though, that Furio doesn't like Christopher Columbus.
Yeah.
Because he's a northerner.
Fuck them. But I never liked Columbus.
Hey, what?
In Napoli, a lot of people are not so happy for Columbus, because he was from Genova.
What's the problem with Genova?
The north of Italy always have the money and the power. They punish the south since hundreds of years. Even today, they put up their nose at us like we're peasants. I hate the north.
I agree, that's a great detail that Furio is kind of on the side of the Native Americans, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah.
But he still hates Columbus. And of course you get a lot of, oh, you know, from the guys because yes. they're offended that Furio is offended by yeah, exactly. their hero.
Yeah. And then ending just again on just wide shot of the guys, just, you know, these gangsters.
Right.
Hanging out. Now, this Italian-American pride thing just plays through the entire episode, and even the ladies of The Sopranos get into it as well. This next scene, they're all working out, including Karen, who's Bobby Bacala's wife, and Adriana is joining the older ladies for a workout sesh.
Yeah. You know, noticeably, Adriana's a bit subdued. Of yeah. course, the most recent thing that happened to her of significance was that she was essentially flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And she is now cooperating with the FBI against her will. So you see Drea De Mateo playing that mm-hmm. throughout this scene.
Yeah.
She's uncomfortable.
Definitely. But invited to this Italian Pride ladies' luncheon.
Right.
That they're going to have. So they get on exercise bikes and they're talking about Furio. Carmela brings up Furio and all the ladies like Furio.
Right.
Except for Adriana, who has to point out that Sandy Fortunato says it looks like a dick coming out of his head, referring to his ponytail.
Right. The trademark Furio ponytail.
Yeah.
And it is funny how all of the middle-aged women
right.
are turned on by Furio.
Yeah.
But, you know, the younger one, which of course would be Adriana, she's just like that. His style doesn't really work for a woman of her generation.
And of course, her only comment in the entire scene leads to a guilt trip.
Right.
Unbeknownst to Carmela, giving it to Adriana about being two-faced.
Yeah. And of course, that's really weighted because, of course, that is the position that Adriana now must find herself in,
mm-hmm.
being two-faced.
That's right. Yeah. And then we see Ralph getting a vibrator in his butt.
Yes, I'm really
just
glad.
Jump straight into that.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm glad that you introduced
well,
it that way.
That's how it happens. If you're watching the episode out of nowhere, you're looking at very attractive Adriana,
yeah,
Drea De Mateo, and then boom,
yeah,
you get Joe Pantoliano enjoying a rimming,
yeah, anal vibration, some good vibrations.
Oh, I just the level of oddity between these two has definitely increased. Their
yeah.
relationship is starting to bring out more. I noticed, too, this is the beginning of some very funny cell phone ringtones.
Right, yeah.
Where Ralph has the Rocky theme.
That's true, he
as
does.
Roe calls and interrupts.
Right, yeah. And, of course, later we will get Bobby Bacala's ringtone.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about this scene, you know, it continues... as troubling and disturbing as it is, it does continue this thread that we get with Janice being very indulgent of her partner's kinky needs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we knew Richie.
Right.
Liked pointing a gun to her head.
Right.
Yeah, Janice's game.
Right, and a little, you know, if we just want to analyze it, it's interesting that Ralphie is so into being dominated, playing the submissive role himself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very clear fantasy that's being enacted where, like, he's a prostitute and Janice is his pimp, I guess, forcing mm-hmm. him to go out and work the streets.
Yeah.
The dialogue here is just fantastic.
Her little whore.
Right. This must have been a fun scene for them to do.
Seriously.
Or an uncomfortable one.
Mm-hmm. One or the other.
Yeah.
Next scene, Polly picks up the phone and gives Johnny Sack a call.
Yeah.
Again. And this time, he has some very important detail to share with Johnny Sack.
That's right. The 98-pound mole.
I have to offer you an apology.
Oh.
At this moment that I am now reminded of the 98-pound mole
yes.
removed. You were correct.
Ah.
It is a 95-pound mole
oh.
that was removed. Bobby Bacala says the 98-pound kid... And then Ralph says 95-pound mole.
There you go.
So you were correct.
Oh,
it was
okay.
a 95-pound mole.
Well, thank you. I accept your apology.
Mm-hmm. And now Johnny Sack knows about the joke.
Right. And it is outrageous that Polly would do this.
Seriously.
I mean, this is pretty serious stuff. Like, he knows that there are going to be consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, even if they weren't in the mafia and all of that, like, what kind of person would do this? Just, like, this incredibly mean thing was said about your wife. You mm-hmm. weren't there. You don't ever need to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Yeah.
And deal with that what you will.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And Paulie gives him all the details. He tells him that it was Ralph.
Yeah.
We don't see that, but we get it from the next scene.
Absolutely.
So New York and New Jersey are sitting down, having a meal and a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Sack is obviously pissed at Ralph.
Have Mazzarone hire more laborers off the books.
Nobody's talking to you.
All right, Jesus.
And everyone's a little bit taken aback by that. But mm-hmm. they move on and, you know, continue to discuss their business, which is still, you know, very much under the umbrella of Polly's betrayal
Absolutely.
Of the family.
Yeah.
Because now Carmine is on Tony's ass about the Frelinghuysen Avenue real estate deal, and it was something that he didn't know about, but now he knows about it. He's upset that New York didn't get their piece.
Well, let's be clear. I don't think Carmine knows about the joke or heard about the joke.
Right.
I think he's being pressured by Johnny Sack.
Yeah.
Johnny Sack is saying, like, hey, we let all these things go by the wayside.
Right.
And Carmine's like, yeah, you're right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't think he knows for sure
what it's about the joke or
any of that.
Yeah, I don't think Carmine knows about the joke. It's just the real estate stuff, which I agree was brought to his attention by Johnny, who was told by Polly, of course, which is another thing that, like, Polly knows better than to do.
Yeah.
So he's clearly doing it to passively, aggressively hurt Tony.
Yeah, and you get this look from Tony and Syl. Like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. It's very unusual. This is not normal for this business interaction between the two families to go. And Tony just has to kind of placate to New York because they are a bigger, badder family.
Right.
Yeah.
So Furio stops by the Soprano household and shares some pastries with Carmela.
Yeah, some looks.
Yeah, some looks. So we see that this is starting to develop a little bit. You know, before we got Carmela sprucing herself up, when she knew that Furio was on his way to pick up Tony. But now what we're getting in this scene is the development that perhaps the feelings are mutual.
Mm-hmm.
So that is significant. You know, this is a slow burn. It could go absolutely nowhere. It could go somewhere. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
But we also get in the background this, you know, outrageously silly.
Oh my God.
Montel Williams broadcast.
Yeah.
In which he is interviewing an Italian cultural leader and this Native American cultural leader, Del Red Clay.
Red Clay,
who will
be
a character in this episode that we revisit.
Also known as the Naked Indian from Wayne's World 2.
Oh, really? Was that him?
That's him.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's great. The half-naked Indian.
Yeah.
Loved it. Okay, so this little broadcast, you know, it just kind of devolves. It's pure comedy.
It I mean, yes, but how funny is it, really? Because it's so over the top.
Right.
It's so dramatic. I don't know. Because who would really say...
Yeah.
The middle passage.
Right.
In reference to their ancestors emigrating.
Yeah. No one would say that.
That's a huge mistake by that guy.
It's thrown in purely for just the silly joke of it all. But it is kind of funny, just the dynamic that you have the black guy, you know, Montel, and the Italian dude essentially on the same side in this argument. Mm-hmm. But then... the Italian guy says the wrong thing, and then Montel is offended as a black man, and they aren't friends anymore in the discussion, which, by the way, is a joke that will be repeated later in this episode.
Yeah.
To also pretty funny, silly effect.
I know. There's those moments there where you're just like, what? What?
Right. Exactly. But the scene concludes with the significant detail that Uncle Junior's trial begins today.
Yeah. I like the cute ending, too, between Tony and Carmela.
Oh, what was that?
Forces him to take a Struvoli.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then he smiles. He's like, all
right. Right.
I'll take the pastry.
If you're going to twist my arm.
Yeah. And then we get to that trial. So we don't skip a beat. We're at Junior's trial. And all Junior cares about are the phone charges between him and his lawyer.
Yeah.
Silly Junior.
Right.
Doesn't even care that the jury's walking in at that exact moment and probably yeah. would be good to look, you know, presentable.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Like a crotchety old man.
Yeah, just murmuring.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, Junior's in court on trial, and we will see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Now, a significant scene is next, the ladies' luncheon. Again, this is also a little bit over the top, a little mm-hmm. bit dramatic from the speaker, trying to compare what people perceive of Italians to what we should actually be saying about us Italians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the entire scene, I was just like, this is, wow, like, why are they here? Like, this is boring. And I don't even mean as a scene it's boring. I just mean for them. Like, don't they have anything better to do?
Obviously not.
Yeah.
But it allows us to get Father Phil
mm-hmm.
and another have some more moments with Father Phil. A very uncomfortable Father Phil once the mafia, anti-mafia remarks come
yeah.
down. And Charmaine is there.
Right.
Also.
Yeah.
Feeling very uncomfortable as well, giving Carmela looks.
Mm-hmm.
Love the flipping off by Roe.
Right.
So great.
Yeah.
Telling
yeah.
just whatever that woman just to piss off.
Right.
So good.
Once the professor gets into her whole mafia references and, you know, the mob wives are all insulted, mm-hmm. Then the scene does actually get pretty funny just as the camera kind of pivots around to people's various looks. And, you know, Father Phil, of course, as you mentioned, he gets uncomfortable. He's really funny
yeah.
when that happens. As soon as the mafia is brought up, he's like, uh-oh, I know this is going to be a problem.
Yeah. Now, the HBO synopsis says it embarrasses Carmela.
Right.
I don't know if she's embarrassed,
right.
per se. I feel like that's pretty strong emotion
mm-hmm.
for Carmela. And she's
right.
a pretty prideful person in general. Because these ladies, you know... It's funny because they don't even pretend to agree with the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that interesting. I find it interesting that they don't hide from the truth, but they also don't flaunt it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't hide from the fact what their husbands do and how they earn their wealth, but they also don't flaunt it.
Yeah.
Either. They're sitting in the back.
Right.
You know, they don't applaud when it comes to that anti-mafia remarks. So mm-hmm. it's very interesting. And
yeah.
I don't think it's embarrassment. Above
right
in I mean in, insulted maybe but
yeah they feel maybe a little bit ambushed or they feel that it was insensitive for the speaker to be sanctioned by Father Phil, especially as Father Phil is aware, as everyone in this room is aware pretty much,
yeah,
that these women, Carmela, Ro, you know, Gabrielle, the rest of them,
mm-hmm.
is it Gabrielle or Gabriella?
Gabby.
Silvio's wife. Okay, let's just
it's
call
Gabby.
Her Gabby. Okay, cool. Well, they're mob wives, and,
yeah.
and everyone knows it, right? So they're insulted, but Gabby is
yes.
the one who really, you know, takes up the charge.
Yeah, Maureen Van Zandt here. Again, just like we mentioned with little Stevie last week,
mm-hmm.
not a actor
right.
by trade, and gets a... fairly meaty scene here, chewing out Father Phil.
Right.
And pretty good, holding her own.
Yeah, yeah, she is good. It's just funny how both of these people who are married and have been married for a really long time,
yeah,
non-actors, but they became actors for this show, and they do a good job. And this is a throwaway scene, pretty much, in
yeah.
a throwaway episode. But, you know, still, it is fun to just kind of get Father Phil's reaction, too, after being chewed out
yeah.
by Gabby. And he's just kind of like, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, now we come to a pretty funny scene. The protest at the Christopher Columbus statue.
Oh, yeah.
This is great.
This is silly.
As it's starting out, we just get that one protester from the Native Americans shouting, Mussolini was Hitler's bitch.
Right.
So that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
And like, that's going to sting the Italians who are there.
Exactly.
And then Artie gets out of the car.
Oh, man.
With the group.
Oh, man. Right away, I laughed. I was like, Artie, come on.
There better not be Columbus.
Yeah.
And then we get a little cameo here from the comedian Nick DiPaolo. I don't know if you know Nick DiPaolo.
Oh, I know Nick DiPaolo. Yeah,
yeah, but he plays the cop there, Joey, that is friends with Syl.
Oh, right.
But apparently has to uphold this permit that the Native Americans have.
Yeah, now this was interesting because you know, obviously there's a bunch of just jokes in this scene. This whole scene is played for laughs pretty much. But, you know, I just thought about a couple things in relatively like recent news.
Mm.
Just like when Patsy starts like climbing the pole to pull down the Columbus like effigy.
Yeah.
Well, you had that situation with the woman who climbed up the flagpole to rip down the Confederate flag.
Oh.
This happened like a couple years back, or maybe it was last year. I'm not sure. And I just thought about that. But then I also thought about Nick DiPaolo telling Silvio, oh, these guys got a permit.
Right.
Of course, that's what Trump said yeah. about the white supremacists, you know, rallying in Charlottesville.
Sure.
And he was like, they had a permit.
So I see what you're doing. You're comparing yeah. the Native Americans of this scene to the white supremacists of
oh,
the
whoa.
Real
oh, whoa. So pump the brakes there.
Because they both had permits. It's okay.
Pump the brakes there a little bit. Just okay. merely saying some of the imagery
yes.
and, you
yeah.
know.
There's some actually the, something that, yeah. that I noticed from the scene or this episode two mm-hmm. that I tied to current
yeah.
affairs. But jumping right back in, of course, when Georgie gets his ass beat
yes.
by the cops and he's the only one who starts getting whooped by the cops.
Yes.
That they're all like, all right, we gotta go.
All right, we gotta go. We gotta go.
But they don't get out unscathed, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
Georgie takes his beating, which is just so wonderful. And then
Little Polly
takes a bottle to the back of the head,
yeah,
which is pretty serious stuff. And then that prompts Artie to be like, uh-oh, I gotta get out of here. You know, he goes full coward, tries yeah. to run away, but not before he takes a smoothie to the back of the head.
Yeah, yeah. It's so good.
And that was so funny because Artie's running away and just some random white dude just pops up and is like, let me throw a drink at the back of this yeah. guy's head.
No, it's just so good.
Yeah.
I love Syl's, we gotta go. Okay.
Yeah.
We gotta go.
Right.
Yeah, it's really good.
And then Patsy gets arrested.
Yeah. And then we go back to the ladies, which again, this felt like a throwaway scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had a recap here. Felt like it should have just ended maybe with the previous, I don't know, but it was just kind of a weird ending as they were all departing. Especially I found it very bizarre
mm-hmm.
how Roe opens the door for Carmela to her car.
Ah, yeah.
When have we ever seen this sort of servitude to Carmela and
yeah.
Tony? Like, never.
That was a little strange.
He
yeah.
opens the door for her and then makes sure she's in, tucked in, closes yeah. the door.
Like she's Carmella's butler.
Right.
Yeah, odd.
Queen
I agree.
Carmella.
Yeah, truly. I guess what we get here is a bit of an emphasis on what Karen is about to go do.
Yeah.
She needs to visit the dentist.
Right. Yes. That is really the only emphasis here other than Carmella being treated like a...
Yeah.
High priestess.
Yeah.
Some weird thing. Yeah.
The Queen of Italy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we cut to Bobby being stuck in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So his son calls. Again, the funny cell phone ringtone here, very Italian. Reminded
yeah.
me, these ringtones reminded me of Pauly's car horn.
Right.
The Godfather car horn. But now that everybody has a cell phone because it's 2002, they all can have Italian ringtones.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah.
But he's calling because Karen wants him to pick up some food for dinner. And then we get this shot, as Bobby's complaining about it, we get a shot of this turned over car causing
right.
the traffic ahead of them.
Yeah.
And this leads into Carmela and Roe coming home together at the Soprano house, gets a call from Gabby, and they find out that Karen's died in a car accident. So we can assume that car, at this point, might have been Karen.
Exactly.
We do learn, we'll just say now, we do learn it was her.
Right. Bit of a shock.
Yeah.
To get such a, I won't say major death. This is a character that we barely knew and barely saw.
Yeah.
But it's a significant death to the characters in this show.
Yeah.
And I completely forgot that it happened in this episode.
So soon, yeah.
Yeah.
Insane. And then we get the reaction from the guys. Mm-hmm. So there are a few of them, Furio, Chris, and Syl and Patsy, talking about Karen.
Yeah. And we get a nice Tony slap to the back of Patsy's head.
Oh, my God. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I am intentionally going to make a GIF, whatever you want to call it, of that reaction.
Awesome.
Because Patsy's, like, head snapping back when Tony slaps him is so good.
Right.
I had to watch it twice. It was so funny.
Yeah. I agree.
It's so good. But yeah, Tony's like talking sweet about Karen and then remembers, oh yeah, you got fucking arrested. Smack.
Right. And then I also like the detail of Tony saying,
what the fuck? We got little Paulie and St. Barnabas. Plus we lost face down there.
This is something that hits home. I can't turn the other cheek on this.
I know, but we're running a business here.
Because of course they went down there. They kind of just got beaten up and pushed away and pushed aside.
Yeah.
They so did. Tony's like, you didn't even kick ass down there. You just kind of got embarrassed.
Yeah. And then the guys leave, but it's just Syl and Tony here. And I thought, finally, they're having an open conversation. It's consigliere to boss. And this open conversation leads to convincing Tony we should do something.
Right.
And that prompts him to immediately call Zelman,
who is tweezing his nose hairs.
Mm-hmm. And can't help him.
Yeah, he's not really concerned about what Tony's talking about.
No.
And this is quite clear. He's got bigger things to do.
Yeah.
Involving his nose.
Involving his nose, which has prompted an itch in my nose right now, which is really weird.
Oh, take care of that. Yeah.
I'm okay.
So here's a fun scene, a fun dynamic.
Yeah.
Janice is in therapy, and she is talking to her therapist about the relationship with Ralphie, and the therapist encourages Janice to end things with Ralphie. What I really like about this therapist is that the actress that performs her is just kind of good, you know, not like too overstated, but also just silly and memorable in kind of a fun way. Very much the therapist that you would expect Jan to have and feel comfortable with.
Do you know who that actress is?
No.
Her name's Joyce Van Patten, and she is the half-sister of Tim Van Patten.
Oh, there you go. Director of this episode, right?
That's right.
That's great.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and she does a good job. And I just found it funny how it's such a broad analysis and a generic analysis that you expect from, you know, just a generic therapist scene where it's, it all goes back to your father and you're using your brother now as the father figure and trying to appease him, which is really appeasing your father. They're very broad strokes, whereas, you know, Melfi's analysis, they're always, you know, very specific, non-generic.
I agree.
You know, focused.
Yeah. And also with this therapist, you know, accent and everything about her and the analysis that you just mentioned, which is incredibly generic and obvious.
Yeah.
It's what people call armchair psychology.
Mm.
And the therapist is like sitting in an armchair.
Yeah.
And it's just great. I mean, this is kind of like that silly therapist that we saw in the previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just very, very indulgent. We had that hippie therapist that Meadow saw, and the hippie therapist in No Show was very just like, yeah, whatever you want, whatever you think is best, you're correct. And this therapist that Janice has is very similar.
Very similar.
Just indulging Janice's every whim.
Yeah, and Janice says, God give me the strength. Therapist says, she will.
Yeah.
And you expect that kind of answer.
You sure do.
She will.
Okay, so for this next scene, this is how I described it in my notes. Ralphie pays a visit to Del Redclay and his irrationally hot teacher's assistant and attempts to blackmail them into calling off their Columbus Day protest.
Yeah.
Would you agree? Sorry, I don't want to go off on a whole tangent.
No, absolutely.
The assistant was irrationally hot.
Yes. Yes, yes. And Ralph introduces himself as Henry Caruso. and he's being a little pervy.
Yes.
This is like...
Very pervy, actually.
Yes. I shouldn't say a little bit pervy. Yeah. He's extremely pervy and obvious. Yeah, it's so random.
Yeah.
It really is. And the lines in here, some of them are kind of just as ridiculous when he says...
I represent a group of concerned citizens who are... very upset about this protest you're spearheading, no puns intended.
Yes.
Come on.
So ridiculous.
Come on. It's yeah. such a silly intimidation plan, too.
Right. Yeah.
Like, really?
Right.
Is that going to phase them?
Right.
That the guy, you know, the Indian crying guy, if he's not really a Native uh-huh. American, is that really going to get them to kind of stop this parade?
Yeah, exactly. It's, I think, even though this scene is entertaining, I think it's so indicative, this scene in particular,
mm-hmm.
of why people in general kind of just hate this episode.
Oh my God.
Because you don't really want to see these characters being this
petty,
broad, petty, silly. Yeah. It feels like they are wasting their time on this. It's
yes.
like Tony, Silvio... You've all got better things to do
yeah.
than worry about a Columbus Day protest. And it gets back to that question of stakes. You know, I think that on The Sopranos, when the stakes feel low, then the audience, you know, you and I included,
yeah.
get upset. We want high stakes for this high stakes world.
Right.
We don't want a comedy episode.
Right. Yeah. And I think they kind of, I don't think they admit it at the end of this episode. But the last scene almost sort of kind of gives it up and says, okay.
Yeah.
Everything you just saw was pretty low stakes.
I agree. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that scene ends with the unusually hot assistant reminding Red Clay that she's actually 1/8 Italian herself.
Right.
So what's the big deal?
Yeah. And also Red Clay's reaction is kind of funny. How he's... like, yeah, we're not going to bow to your intimidation, you know, Ralph, although he doesn't call him Ralph, obviously, and, you know, just kind of sends Ralph on his way with his poster and all of that.
Yeah.
But then later, Red Clay's like, God damn it. Is this true?
Right.
This could ruin us. You know, it's
like,
just
seriously?
Stupid. Yeah.
And now the Christopher Columbus theme will never stop. Every scene will have to be something about Christopher Columbus, including the next scene at the Soprano household in the morning. Okay, so finally, AJ is reading a book. Finally, he's teaching himself something, and his parents are like, nope.
Right.
No, that's not good. Nope, 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 nope.
Yeah.
I don't like it, because that's not who Christopher Columbus is to us.
Right, exactly. And honestly, you know, I kind of felt like Carmela should know better. I mean,
right.
Tony, I get it. I get his whole attitude.
Sure.
But, I mean, Carmela, too. I was a little disappointed that she was so pro-Columbus. In a funny way, I guess, telling AJ that he must respect Christopher Columbus or else.
Yeah. It reminded me of that episode where they're sitting down at the kitchen table for dinner and they're talking about all the Italians who have created, you know, great things. You know, it was that episode where Meadow says, what about the mafia?
Right.
Yeah. It reminded me of that where now they're kind of going outside of the scope of people who should be classified as great Italians.
Right. So here we are at Karen's wake, and it is very clear that Johnny Sack has a problem with Ralphie Cifaretto.
Yeah.
And this issue is one that could cause much bigger problems down the line. Now, what is key here is that the guys, Tony and Syl, don't know the source of Johnny's beef, but it is very clear that he has one.
I was struck more by Steve Sharipa's performance here.
Oh, yeah.
The tears were real.
Oh, yeah.
And strong.
Right.
And I felt like it really got me. Like, it really hurt how much he cared for her. And then you hear Gabby say how he loved her. And then they all look at their men.
Yeah.
At the same time. which was a nice shot. I actually really like that.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and I really like that too.
Yeah. And then they mention how Bobby never had a Gumar.
Right.
Which is crazy. But yeah, all the ladies, part of the family, part of the arrangement, is they have their routine to take care of a family when a member has deceased, passed on.
Yeah, this is what Ralph will later describe as ZD Patrol.
ZD Patrol, that's correct. Yeah. Leading into this Johnny Sack Ralph tension.
Yeah.
Ralph is starting this conversation off by apologizing for missing,
right,
like a nursery graduation for presumably his granddaughter.
Yes.
Which is so ridiculous. And yeah, he's going to hand him money.
Right.
For it. But yeah, this beef is pretty intense.
Yeah. It's so funny because, yes, Ralph's approach here, he knows that Johnny is mad at him. Mm-hmm. And he knows that that's not a good thing. So Ralphie's actually stepping up and trying to make an effort to, you know, see what's going on exactly, and to literally kind of buy his way out of Johnny Sack's anger.
Yeah.
Johnny's having none of it. So, again, this is a serious problem.
But I will say this. As Johnny is leaving Ralph, right?
Yeah.
And he's walking away, we get a little, maybe it's ADR, or maybe we actually capture it. But Tony says,
"Hey, can I choke you?"
And I just thought that was so funny because Tony knows his cereals.
Right.
And yeah, I guess Johnny Sack kind of looks ghoulish.
It's funny. I never noticed that. But now that I've heard it, it is so accurate.
It's good.
I'll tell you what I did notice also. Just the cheap shot Ginny Sack fat joke that we got in this scene.
Oh.
And they're always cheap shots. But it was actually, you know, production related. This is intentional. Okay. When Ginny sits down,
yeah,
with the rest of the wives,
right,
there's a very audible sound of chair squeak. Oh.
Ginny, hi.
God.
I mean, they put it in there. They put it in there on purpose. It is a joke that is intentional. They put in the sound effect of the chair.
How hard did you laugh?
I didn't laugh at all. I'm laughing now.
Rewind it.
I mean, I guess if I laughed, I was just laughing at sort of the silliness of them actually doing that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, obviously, we all know that it's wrong to make fun of a woman for being overweight, or, you know, anyone for being overweight. It's just wrong to do that. And, you know, the show knows that, as they have this reaction to the Ralph, you know, joke that Johnny has. But at the same time, they do just, in their writing, make jokes at Jenny's expense.
Yes,
and this chair sound effect is one of them. Yeah. The chair gag.
It is. It is. For sure. So next we have Ro and Ralph. And this is their breakup scene.
So funny. I always forget that they're still a couple.
Right.
Although not anymore. That's what this scene is about.
Yeah. And I thought when Ro had that line about, "Don't you know anything about death and pain?" It's like, well, no, he doesn't really understand death and pain, Ro. He's a psychopath.
Yeah.
Like, of course he has no idea what you're talking about. It does not faze him.
He dispenses it for a living.
Yeah, he doesn't know what you're going through right now.
Right.
He's on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Right.
But yeah, I really just liked, you know, Joe Pantoliano, Sharon Angela here. Very good.
Yeah.
Her character's been through so much.
As she points out in this scene.
Yeah.
This lost actress, her husband. Yeah.
It's so much. It's crazy.
Right? Yeah. Lost her son. And she
lost
really.
Her friend.
She needs support. And Ralphie has sort of hit, you know, the wall.
Yeah.
He can't really be around this grief anymore. He wants to have fun. He doesn't want some woman weeping about death.
Right. Well, I mean, that's tough for both sides, for sure.
But he doesn't want to be bummed out anymore.
No.
So he breaks it off.
Yeah.
From there, we go to the stables.
Mm-hmm.
And we get Hesh, who owns these horses at the stables.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony and a couple of the guys. And they're having more ongoing discussion about Columbus and that whole controversy. And what did Columbus do that was bad, et cetera, et cetera. Tony asks Hesh to reach out to a Native American that Hesh knows,
right,
who can possibly put the pressure on Red Clay. native to native.
Yeah.
But then things, you know, take a silly direction, as they do in almost every single scene
in this
episode. And this is what I was referring to when I said that the Montel Williams gag would sort of be repeated here.
Right.
Where Hesh and his Cuban friend,
Random Cuban guy.
Yeah, random Cuban guy who I think was actually in a couple episodes of Seinfeld years before.
That's funny.
I may be wrong about that, but I think it's the same actor.
Okay.
But anyway, they're on the same side talking about oppression. You know, Hesh as a Jew has empathy for people who feel oppressed. And, you know, obviously the Cuban man as a Cuban man relates to, you know, oppression and all of that. But then the Cuban man takes it a little too far in Hesh's eyes
right. When
he compares Columbus to Hitler. Hesh as a Jew is offended.
Yeah.
And then they almost come to blows.
Right.
Have to be separated.
Yeah. Because we get this random history lesson from the two of them. And then we get one of our well-known established characters getting into a beef with a random character. It just doesn't feel important.
Yeah.
There's no significance to it. It's like, all right, fine. Hesh is angry at this guy. This guy we hopefully never see again because it's not important.
Right.
Okay.
Just, yeah.
So bad. It is bad.
Again.
Not great.
Yeah. No, I agree. And again, it just is the perfect sort of representation of why most people feel this episode just doesn't work.
Yeah. I guess the other note here is that Ralph's buying a horse.
Yeah.
Named Pyomai.
Little thing established here in this scene.
Little thing.
Yeah.
A small scene here. Carmilla on ZD patrol and delivering, food to Bobby's family and getting poor Bobby. Now he's a single father, widowed father. He's got two kids. It's tough. But I really enjoyed this phone call that Carmela picks up from Junior, and he just kind of goes on and on about how he met Karen and what she said to him. And Carmela calls out his selfishness for just calling to see if Bobby's going to pick him up.
Right.
Or if his old man friend is going to pick him up.
Yeah.
Keep forgetting his name. Murph.
Yeah. 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 It's funny. Cause of course Carmela will never forgive Junior.
Yeah.
For his attempt at taking Tony out in season one. So I like how that is played, you know, four years later. She still hasn't forgiven him even a little bit, and she will avoid him at all costs. And I just love how Edie Falco kind of plays her sort of like anger, but she's going to be patient with it, but she's not going to let this conversation go on 1 second, you know, longer than it needs to.
Yeah.
And she in fact just hangs up on the old man.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed how, I don't know if you noticed this, but I just like how straight Junior stands while he's talking to Carmela.
Yeah, he does have that kind of posture,
right,
where he kind of leans back almost,
right,
so straight.
Yeah exactly. It's a kind of, I don't know if it's just like a sort of old school masculinity thing that he's kind of employing there, but I just thought that was noticeable and a cool choice by Dominic Chianese.
For sure. And next, Ralph is free. No more Roe. He can spend all of his time with Janice. And now you can kind of see how Janice, at least in the beginning of the scene, feels kind of trapped, because her last therapy session was, we're going to try to end it with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now this guy has no ties, only to her now. That makes it a little bit more complicated to end it.
Yeah. She's very clearly kind of in a state of mixed feelings, but then with a little bit more pressure from Ralph to take things to the bedroom, she just kind of gives in and follows him upstairs.
And that's where we get him saying, you're on ZD Patrol 2? Rose got Thursdays.
Right.
Which made me think, how long does this go for? Is it every Thursday, or does she just have Thursdays in general for any time this happens?
I thought about that, and yes, I just wonder, how long does ZD Patrol go on? Is it the first week after the loss? Is it a few weeks, you know, or do you just kind of, does it just sort of like peter out when everyone sort of feels like enough time has passed?
Something.
Right.
Yeah. Now again, this next scene at Vesuvio's, we have the meeting of the Mohunk chief named Doug Smith. Right. And again, it's just kind of funny that they were expecting a Native American.
Right.
An Indian, not a white dude.
Right.
Who's passing off his 1/16th Native American blood.
Yeah, so he can get in on that, like, casino money, I guess.
Oh, no, it's called a racial awakening.
Right.
Sorry.
yeah, that's really great. Yeah, the cynicism of that, of a guy who's basically just like, yeah, I'm a white guy. Then all of a sudden he's like, wait, I can capitalize on my ancestry. So now I'm Native American. Now I'm a chief.
Yeah, a whole chief.
Yeah. And, of course, Tony calls him out on it, which is just kind of funny.
Yeah.
So,
but this is the guy who presumably is going to help them against Red Clay.
Right. That's the conclusion. And then we got this other guy, this middleman.
Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ends the scene with one of the worst jokes I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, God. Is it like Mohunk if you love? Mohunk if you love?
Right.
Something?
It's not worth remembering.
No, it really is.
Let's move on.
We'll move on. To Janice's ZD Patrol.
Right.
KFC.
Well, this is so funny, this KFC. And she blew off bringing Bobby dinner the other night so right. she could go stick a vibrator up Ralphie's ass.
Yeah.
But I love how she spins it into...
I'm sorry I didn't make it last night. My Bible group had a potluck for the homeless and I was on cleanup crew. So.
And I was stuck on cleanup or whatever it is she says.
Huge lie. It's so good.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bobby, for once in his life probably, says food. Like, that's going to solve everything.
Oh, zing.
Right?
Right.
But, I mean, this is the guy who walked into a room and Junior could smell the White Castles on him. So, yeah.
Burger boy.
But he shares his side of the story, his guilt.
Yeah.
That he feels because he was stuck in traffic because of his wife's accident and death. And he could have, if he knew, been there, tried to help her, come be there for her in her last moments. And super sad. And
yeah.
Steve Sharipa is so good.
He does a good
job. So good, in fact, that Janice actually has emotions.
Right.
And feelings.
Yeah. And she has a bit of an awakening herself.
Yeah.
So moved by his display of grief and love for his dead wife.
Then we get Tony getting the news that there's no luck from the chief. Doug Smith was not able to make things happen with Red Clay, but at least he offers him a high rollers room. And if the guys want to come up, they can come up.
Yeah, they'll be comped.
Yeah.
It's all great. Then Syl jumps in after Tony tells him that it's time to let this whole matter go and
right.
just drop it all. It's done. They lost. Let's move on. And Syl still kind of wants to fight. And he's like, we think Red Clay's, you know, fucking a graduate student.
The hot graduate
right.
student that was next to him. Yes.
Yeah. But no, Tony literally lays down a firm hand on Syl and says, no, we're done with this.
And then we go into Janice and her therapist part two. And the therapist is just so happy to hear this story about Bobby, you know, because he has truth and love. But then she finds out he works for her brother as well.
What does this man do?
He works with my brother, but he's not like the others.
Janice.
Now, Sandy, he's different, believe me.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, I mean, yes, Bobby is not clean exactly. He is very much tied to the world
yep.
of the mafia. But Janice is correct in that he is different. And as the mob wives pointed out at the wake, you know, he's the only one who doesn't have a gumar. And you could just tell, like, he's a gentle soul.
Right.
He is different than the other guys.
Yeah.
He's certainly different from Ralphie and Richie.
Yes. And I just have to mention that detail from the therapist. You know, when she says you have to talk to Ralph and use that compassion and respect that you're famous for.
That is a beautiful setup.
Who is this therapist?
Right.
What kind of encouragement is this?
Right.
Has Janice just been lying this entire time?
Of course. Of course she has. She's ridiculous. I mean, I have to say that I'm glad that you mentioned that line because I like that line. it is a setup for what is going to be a glorious punchline coming up shortly. Tony, Chris, Patsy, and Syl enjoy a night of comped gambling. We get yet another joke that is horrible.
Yeah.
This time from Tony. But I did like how the guys respond with very obviously fake sycophantic laughter. Which I guess is what you have to do when your boss makes a joke. Even if it's not even remotely funny, you still have to laugh because he's the boss.
My note was how Patsy's getting a lot of screen time.
He is.
He's on this little casino trip with Chris, Syl, and Tony? That's right. Amazing.
Yeah.
Where's his rank is what I want to know.
He's got a pretty high rank.
He has to.
But also,
he's not a capo. It's just kind of weird.
I think that, you know, maybe they just really like this actor, which I understand, too.
Oh, love him.
Because there's such an authenticity to this actor.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And just with the glasses, too, there's just something kind of fun about him.
Yeah.
And so it is enjoyable to see Patsy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, of course, he was a really huge part of No Show also. So this guy's getting a lot of play.
Yeah. And I guess we have to mention this next scene where we get Melfi and Richard in a scene together just to see Richard's pride. Because we know how prideful he is about being Italian. So, of course, we're going to get a scene of Richard turning on the TV and watching the unfolding of the parade disruption and everything and the fight. And he's so dramatic about it. How it could be scored to this classical music.
Right.
And it's just, okay, Richard.
Such an annoying character. And I guess we haven't seen him since he was being pretty dramatic, you know, justifiably dramatic in Employee of the Month.
Right.
But yes, we would be remiss in an episode that's all about the kind of silliness of the Italian-American struggle with its own, like, cultural pride.
Right.
You know, we have to have him have a little, you know, beat in this episode. What I thought was kind of interesting, too, just a minor thing. But it appears that Richard and Melfi are off again.
Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Well, neither here nor there, but just a little detail.
Too bad.
Right. I mean, I guess in a way you could sort of say that maybe it was possibly just kind of the tragic fallout of Melfi's rape.
Yeah.
So we get a really great scene here where Janice breaks up with Ralph using the compassion and respect that she's famous for. I say that very sarcastically.
Yes.
Because, you know, Ralph comes in, he's moving in, he's got his suitcase, he's got another smaller bag.
Yeah.
He comes up the stairs for, you know, conceivably just more sex.
Right.
And, you know, Janice, though, she's had her epiphany about Bobby and like what she wants and what she feels like she deserves. Ralph does not represent that. She needs to end the relationship. She shoves him down the stairs.
Yeah. Violently.
Lands in a heap.
Yeah.
On the landing.
Head over heels.
Head over heels. I just love that. How, you know, that whole thing about compassion and respect. And yes, it wouldn't have been that hard for Janice to just sit down with Ralphie. And what I'm just noticing now is that, ironically, Ralphie displayed more compassion and respect when he broke up with Ro.
That's true.
Than Janice displays when she's breaking up with Ralph.
That's true. And you would think Janice could use her status as being the boss's sister to full effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's Ralph going to do if you break up with him? He can't do much. Boss's sister. And she doesn't seem to understand how to use that to her advantage very well.
Right.
And makes it about shoes.
Yeah.
He didn't take off his shoes. So that's, she points that out. That gets in her head. She's like, he didn't take off his shoes. Oh, that's good. You didn't take off your shoes. I told you to take off your shoes. And then just unleashes on him.
Right.
And knocks him down the stairs. And you think, oh, great. We have another Richie situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
But he survives.
He does.
With a bad back.
Right. Yeah. And he makes some empty threats towards Janice.
Right.
Janice knows they're empty threats. They both know that she's not really touchable. Because of what you just mentioned.
Yeah.
She's
the
sister of the boss.
She does run and hide, though.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, it's funny, too, because this is not the first or last time that we'll see this sort of thing happen in The Sopranos, where, and I believe I've mentioned it before, a character wants to take violent action against another character, so they raise a non-issue to justify it.
Sure.
And in this case, it's Ralphie with the shoes. And I just kind of liked that little detail.
This is a good point. Yeah, for sure. And now we get the final scene of the episode, and actually my favorite scene of the episode, this very last one. And to, you know, to a little bit what I spoke about earlier, this is kind of the apology scene for the entire rest of the episode.
The apology of the writers to the audience.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're on their ride home from the casino. Syl's driving and realizes he missed the parade. So the whole thing was just a waste of time because Syl forgot about the parade anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't even there for it. He forgot it was Monday.
Right.
It's Monday? Yes, it's Monday.
Yeah.
And forgot about it. Okay. That's already very funny. But then what's even more funny is that he says we should whack Red Clay. Kill the guy.
Yeah.
And Tony's had enough. And he reveals that all Chief Doug Smith wanted was for Tony to get in touch with Frankie Valli, which I guess now we learn that they have some sort of relationship with Frankie Valli. Also, not the last time we'll hear about Frankie Valli, but tells Syl that he has to make the call and call Frankie Valli. And Syl's like, I haven't talked to him in years. Tony doesn't give a shit.
Right.
He's so pissed off.
Yeah.
And I just love how from this moment on, it just, this scene gets a lot better.
Right.
It really does.
Yeah, Tony launches into a great Tony Soprano rant. Usually we get these in a Melfi scene.
Right.
But here we get it.
I just really liked it because you made some current event references today. And I feel like what Tony's saying here is very to the times as well. Syl basically tells Tony that he's Italian-American. It's important to him. And it's important to be a part of a group. And Tony makes that comment of group. Who cares about being in a group? And he talks about, like, where's our self-esteem? And he goes on this really important rant about how people wanting to feel like victims, that everybody has to feel like a victim. Everybody has to feel like a tortured class of citizenry. And he's just saying, look at Gary Cooper.
I don't know. If he was a Metagon around nowadays, he'd be a member of some victims group. The fundamentalist Christians, the abused cowboys, the gays, whatever the fuck.
He was gay, Gary Cooper?
No! Are you listening to me? Hey, people suffered. Did you? Except for maybe the feds?
Yeah, I think
from Chris
he was gay, Gary Cooper? Yeah.
Yeah. But he's just talking about tribalism.
Right.
And everybody has to be part of a group. We see that a lot today, like people like siding in different groups and different camps, and all Tony is saying, like, you're you because you're you. He didn't have the number one titty bar in northern New Jersey from being Italian.
Right
He did it because he's him.
Yeah.
And he finally just kind of like sets the record straight and goes off.
Yeah It is kind of cool what Tony is saying here, in a sense. You know, he's calling out his own culture, kind of calling out everyone else's culture. This is sort of a very clear example of the writers voicing their opinions through the characters, you know.
Yeah.
But it's still fun, you know. And as you kind of brought up, it's sort of the apology for this episode. Tony's essentially saying that everything that happened in this episode and this entire journey that they went on was sort of pointless and empty and silly and had no meaning at all.
I think the only meaning there is just for Tony to flip the switch.
Right.
And be like, actually, this is how it is, and that's how the episode's ending.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that maybe, you know, if you really want to be generous towards this episode, Christopher, you could sort of say that it is the writers making their kind of final statement at Italian people or any other kind of people who were offended by The Sopranos because it presented Italians as gangsters.
Right.
which was an ongoing controversy, at least in the first few years of the show.
Yeah.
So they're just saying, hey, this is how it is. If you have a problem with it, go find something else to be upset about, because it's not really a big deal.
Yeah. But thus ends this episode. Christopher, in the books, we did it.
Yeah.
We found something to talk about.
We made it through. Episode.
Well, that does it for this episode of The Soprano Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Join us next week. But until then, if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to support it, there are many ways to do that. Subscribe on iTunes and Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Google Play and all those other services that have podcasts. And then also like us on Twitter at The Soprano Show. And on Facebook, we're still on there as well. You know, just tell people. Let people know. Get the word out.
Well, people have been doing a good job, right? I mean, we had a milestone recently.
We did. We have 1,000 followers on Twitter now.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool. It's very, very cool. And we love hearing from all of you. And we'll just continue the conversation with you. But like we do with every episode, ending with our favorite line. I'm pretty sure we already agreed that in the middle of this, while we were paused at one point, that we actually do share the same line.
Exactly.
Here, which is pretty amazing. We haven't had one of those in a while, but would you like to share with the
audience? Oh, sure.
And what it meant to you, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So this line comes from Tony in the aftermath of learning that Johnny Sack has definitely got a beef with Ralph.
Yeah.
And Tony basically says to Syl,
"You saw how I was with them at dinner the other night? Something's going on. Plus, I don't know where Carmen's up my ass on this Freelandizing Avenue bullshit. Somebody's talking too much. It's costing me money."
The reason I love that line is because it was the highest stakes line, the most important line, the most Sopranos-y line of the entire episode.
That's so funny. Yeah, because I don't think I would have articulated it that way, but I think that's exactly why I like it too.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it felt the most like dramatic.
It did.
But real at the same time. Where you're like, yeah, shit, this is the bigger deal. Paulie is talking to Johnny Sack about family business.
Right.
And hopefully we'll see what comes of that.
We'll see.